Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, 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 what's up, world? It's Badass Thuggin' like I usually do. And you better turn it up, bust some speakers out, cause we off the motherfucking cup. You dig how we do it? Dog Pound Gangsters 2000 and beyond.
Yeah, this is Cassidy the Hustler. And right now, you listening to the Guillotine. Show them the respect they deserve, man. Off the Cut Radio, man. Y'all already know how they doing it, man. I need y'all to stay tuned. They've been doing it for years. So show them the respect they deserve. And you heard it out of bars, man. Easy.
Keep it moving like this. Yo, this your boy Rampage. You're not rocking with the best. With Off the Cut Radio. Classic. History. Fix your face to all you haters. We off the cuff, baby.
Y'all is the Queen of Trap representing Crenshaw, and you are now tuned in with Off the Cuff Radio. What's up?
What's up, y'all? This is Miss Irresistible, giving a shout out to the live show on Friday night, Off the Cuff Radio, and I'm live from the 704. Make sure y'all tune in for the blazing hot music.
What it is, what it ain't, what it do, it's Chilly Chill from that original Lynch Mob, and Off the Cuff Radio is always where it's at on Friday nights. West West, y'all.
Like it too? Good. I'm gonna tell you some things that I don't like. It's already hard enough out here for a black man. You know? Lately I've been feeling kinda lonely, so I'm thinking about calling you. I find myself staring at my iPhone, not knowing what the hell to do. Cause I don't wanna fuss and I don't wanna cut your ass out. So you can argue with yourself till you're blue in the face and pass out. But damn, I wanna call so bad. But last night you called me your broke-ass baby dad. And started posting your subliminals, knowing it would make me mad. But you could play that game, I got something for that ass. Well, alright. I'ma block you on my Facebook. I'ma block you on my Instagram. You ain't got nothing to see, girl. You already know who I am. I'ma block you on my Facebook. I'ma block you on my Instagram. You ain't got nothing to see, girl. You already know who I am.
Keep my heart beating like the sound of the drumming. It's a fact, you're one hell of a woman. Like 4 quarters, I keep it 100. Like 420, I gotta stay blunting. Cause you be bugging, you stay blowing my high. You be fussing all the time. You be talking about what's yours and mine. You won't show enough respect to my grind. I ain't got a lot of money, but goddamn it, I'm trying. Yeah, you let me get the keys to your weapon, I appreciate it. But every time you get mad, you take the keys back, knowing it's gonna get me frustrated. Then you change your status, talking about it's complicated. Then you start harassing all the chicks on my pages. Act like I control all the things that they be saying. Now I gotta clean the mess, and you're the one who made it. So I'm blocking your ass, cause I know you hate it. Damn, I wanna call.
I'ma block you on my Facebook. I'ma block you on my Instagram. You ain't got nothing to see, girl. You already know who I am. I'ma block you on my Facebook. I'ma block you on my Instagram. You ain't got nothing to see, girl. You already know who I am.
Damn, I wanna call so bad.
Yeah, we are episode 560 of Off the Cuff Radio, exclusive Monday night episode. I'm your host, King Eric, the Media Assassin. And this show is sponsored by Buddy Boy Entertainment, Da Vinci Clothing, Fleetwood and the Cotton Pickers, Screwball Radio. I got my host T-Max with the facts on the line. What's good?
What it do, y'all? It's another magnificent Monday on that fresh frequency known as OTC, Off the Cuff Radio. You already know. And shout out to our co-hosts, of course, the Los Angeles Chill, and of course, DJ Sincere, Dirty Basement Radio. And tonight, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, a very special show. We have a very special guest online. You know, he's representing, you know, my home state of Virginia, and more specifically, my part of town, Hampton Roads. This individual is an artist. He's a devoted dad, businessman, and all-around good guy who embodies everything that his clothing line for all those that hustle, you know, in every sense of the word, in terms of perseverance, grind, success, and always, above all, staying positive and pragmatic in his approach. Without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, the owner, proprietor of the Faith Clothing Line, and known as the artist in music, ladies and gentlemen, Antoine Henderson. Welcome, man. Welcome. It's been a long time, but we got it. What's
going on, brother?
Man? Yo, yo. Glad to be here tonight, man. That was a dope, you know, tune in, man, call in, and I hear my song playing. I'm like, oh, yeah, these fellas is ready. Let's get it.
Yes, sir, man. Got to hit them with the music first and foremost before we get to the dialogue to let them know that you're a real talented individual. You got a real independent movement going on, and it's only right for us to be behind that because we're for the underdogs.
Absolutely, absolutely, man. I'm so thrilled, man. So happy to be here, man. And, you know, it's always good to talk to, you know, genuine individuals, man, and, you know, just spread the word and the message, yo, and do it organically, man, and control the narrative, you know what I mean?
Absolutely, absolutely. One thing about it, man, you know, you embody hip-hop in every way, from your music to your business, your everyday life in terms of the being, getting it, you know, from the ground up, building a monument of magnificence. Like, we get into it. 757, stand up, two up, two down. Tell everybody about yourself and how you got started in this.
Well, I go by the name Hen Music, of course. You know, my mom, you know, parents named me Antoine Henderson. You know, I'm just a young fella, man. Came from by way of Connecticut. You know, I moved to Virginia Beach when I was 13, getting ready to turn 14. And you know, you know, a lot of times, you know, we tell people, you know, yeah, relocated from Connecticut to Virginia Beach. You know, the first thing you're gonna think of is, let me ask you, what would you think would be the reason why I would come from Connecticut to Virginia Beach?
Two words, Hartford. Well, three words, Hartford, Bridgeport, and Waterbury. We know how Connecticut
is. Yeah, no doubt, no doubt. So, you know, a lot of times people would think it was a military transition. You know, like, oh yeah, was your parents in the military? I was like, nah, yo, they just wanted to get the hell up out of Connecticut, man. You know what I'm saying? And
for those that don't know, so it's real out there.
Yeah, it gets real, you know what I'm saying? You know, it's like, yo, ain't a bunch of, like, preppy, you know, schools and a bunch of white people out there and this. I'm like, I mean, yeah, you get that anywhere, man, but, you know, it gets real out there, man, you know what I'm saying? And it's maybe not the most dangerous place, but it gets real. And I know, you know, me growing up, you know, I came up in a project called Yale Acres, you know, in Meriden, Connecticut. Also lived in Waterbury, Connecticut. And we always ended up, like, next to, like, crack houses and drug dealers and stuff, you know. And then my father was one of those people that was, like, kind of cool with everybody. No matter, you know, what walks of life they were in, man, they just gravitated towards my parents. And, you know, my parents were known to have, like, the dopest house parties and stuff like that. So it was always, like, a bad association that like the city police and stuff and detectives, you know, they would always think that my dad was involved with a lot of like what's known as trap houses and stuff nowadays, but we know them as crack houses, you know what I'm saying? I grew up in the 80s and 90s, and they just got tired of it, man, and said, you know, let's get up out of here, and wanting to get down south, man. And, you know, Virginia Beach was one of those places that my mother, she, you know, would come down with her friends and go to, like, the Greek Fest and stuff, and it was like, you know, they took a vacation here, and then, shoot, in the year 2000, they relocated here, man. And, you know, I went to high school here. I was an athlete at Bayside High School.
Yeah,
my main, all day. I actually moved out, when I came out to Virginia Beach, I moved to North Ridge, you know, that's the whole Bayside Arms area, you know what I'm saying? So, we actually learned a lot about the whole, the geographic zoning and stuff, man, with the whole neighborhood rivalries with, the Bayside Arms and Lake Edward situation. So, you know, me staying out in North Ridge, once again, moving from Connecticut, we ended up right next door to a drug spot, you know what I'm saying? And only difference was like, this same project. We came out here into these nice townhouses in a neighborhood called North Ridge, you know what I'm saying? But we found out that, hey, man, just because they're nice, you know, two-story townhouses, is real out here too, you know what I mean? So that's actually what influenced my parents to buy a home, you know, by the time I was a sophomore in high school. And like I said, man, I was grounded by sports, man, football being the main sport. Played all 4 years in high school, ended up being a captain my senior year. I went off to college and went to St. Paul's for a year and played football. Transferred to Norfolk State my second year. I kind of gave up football after, you know, just losing the love for the game. I didn't see myself going all the way and playing on Sundays. So I kind of left that, you know, that part out, man. And that's when the next part of my journey began, man. And I got, you know, I was a mass communications major at Norfolk State. So I started taking, like, the studio classes, man, and, you know, TV and film directing and audio production, and you know what I'm saying? That's where I started getting into my whole what kind of motivates me and drives me now, outside of course the fashion part that came later. But if anybody, you know, knows me for, you know, being the owner of Sound Lloyd Productions, and I believe that's where you might know me as, you know what I'm saying? We met in that realm when I was, you know, working with DJ Wise and you know, doing audio engineering and stuff for live events, and, you know, just getting behind the camera and filming people and shooting music videos, and, you know, that kind of kept me grounded for a while. And then, yeah, you know, after college, when I started, like, you know, of course, the music stuff, I took the music stuff serious in college. I started doing shows and open mics, and then I came across an individual named Keena Scott. We formed an alliance. You know, we were in a band together. You know, I was an MC and she was singing and playing the guitar and stuff, and had an opportunity to open up for Wale at the Nova, his first tour, Wale and J. Cole. I'm talking like J. Cole, when he was on his first run, you know what I'm saying? He had one mixtape out. Nobody really knew who he was. So, you know, this was Wale's attention deficit tour when he had Nike boots on. That's all he had out.
Oh, man, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I caught that whole wave, man. And, yeah, I did my first big show ever. You know, I did it at the Nova. And, man, it was a really great response, kept me going. And my next opportunity would be, like, the AFRAM Fest. And then later on that year, I opened up at the Norfolk State Homecoming. I did a show with Trey Songz and Fabolous. And
oh, wow. Okay,
I mean,
okay.
Yeah. So that's when the wave really started to pick up for me. And I just utilized the whole Norfolk State, you know, just the whole college scene. You figure this is around 2009, 2010, when, you know, the internet was starting to really, really pick up. And, you know, I was catching that whole wave with the, you know, like I said, Wale, Wiz Khalifa era, and, you know, Currency, J. Cole, and, you know, B.O.B., Asher Roth, that whole energy, man. You know, I'm kind of in that same age group as them. So, you know, and that ended up being the whole, you know, everything in a nutshell, man. I don't want to give it all away. I want to allow y'all to, you know, ask some questions and stuff. But, you know, that's a little bit about me for the most part. And, of course, you know, there was a whole nother round with the fashion stuff. But, you know, that's just the whole background.
One thing about it, man, is what you detail in all of your history, which is, say, decorated is an understatement. I mean, those are some hell of a distinctions, you know, that you have in terms of your credentials that are, I mean, that's unbelievable. When you look at how the game was, of course, shout out to DJ Wise, and of course, you know, my HBCU, behold the green and gold. The elite, the excellent, the proud, the mighty Norfolk State University. You know,
yes, sir.
Definitely something that, while you may have not been born here, you embedded yourself in this area and became an adopted son, of which we are so proud to have you as one of our own and call you as one of our own. You are one of our own. And to see yourself kind of getting that scene, like you said, you know, Hen, in terms of what was happening during that time, what was it like for you watching a lot of the local artists in addition to yourself in Virginia in terms of them making their ascent? You had so many artists like Paste O'Dolla, you know, you know, of course, the Clips, you know, it kind of gotten in there, you know, Nas and the Neptunes pretty much were already running. I mean, Timbaland and Missy, I mean, enough said. I mean,
right.
For some of the lesser known, like the Cartel, of course, with M. Watts and all of them. What was it like watching them come along as well as yourself? How would you describe the whole VA hip-hop scene during that time?
I was just honored to just find my place in it, because a lot of those names that you you just named, of course, like the let's separate the tiers. You know, we have the
right.
Clips, Missy, Timbaland, and Autumn. You know, those would be like, I mean, I was aware of them even when I was in Connecticut. You know what I'm saying? And what was so crazy is, before I even knew I would be moving to a Virginia, 757 Virginia Beach, I was very fascinated with the whole energy and the sound, not even knowing that the sound was coming from this particular place. So I remember being 12 years old, 5th, 6th grade, right? And I remember hearing Gina Thompson, you know, the things you do, and then I hear this,
yeah,
and then you have it. You ain't ready for Puff Daddy, beware. How? I'm like, yo, who is this? This is dope. You know what I'm saying? And then 702 drops. You know what I'm saying? And you know, you hear the same chick again. You know what I'm saying? And then, I'm like, so I started catching wind of who this Missy Elliott was, and then. Of course, you know, when the I Can't Stand the Rain came out, it was just like, okay, this lady's serious and she's here to stay. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So then, so that's the Missy, and then just, you know, my history with Timbaland, right? I remember being, I mean, all through my junior high. I mean, you figure I was in junior high from 97 through 99, 2000, you know what I'm saying? So that whole era is what drove me, you know, the Nori. I'm in sixth grade when Super Thug came out. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I'm in sixth grade when I'm hearing all this Timberland sound. And yo, one of my favorite productions, and if not my top five, I'll say my top five productions ever produced was Ride or Die Chick, with the locks. And you know,
mm-hmm,
what I'm saying? Like, I was, and it took me years to find out that Timbaland produced that. And it was crazy at the beginning of the song. They say, good looking out, Timbaland. You know what I'm saying? But I think it was when the video dropped out. Because, of course, you know, the album came out first. And once the Ride or Die Chick came out, I was so fascinated with that little Latin guitar or whatever. And just the whole energy of it. And then once again, it's this Timberland, you know, guy, you know, still not even identifying where he was from. And then, you know, you get the Aaliyah. Of course, Aaliyah had ran the game, you know what I'm saying, with the One in a Million and If Your Girl Only Knew. And then the Are You That Somebody and What's So Different. Like, I'm still in Connecticut when all this stuff is coming out. So in 2000, I'm moving to Virginia Beach. And I think that summer was like the summer of, that was like Shake It Fast and the Ludacris, you know, Throw Them Bowls and all that stuff. You know what I'm saying? And I remember my dad, mm-hmm, telling me, he's like, yo, you know, oh, 2001. Yeah. You're right. But all this same era, you know what I mean? I remember my dad telling me, he's like, yo, you know, the guy who produced, the people who produces, they from here, yo, right here in Virginia Beach. I remember being on Wizard Duck Road, and I'm like, yo, stop playing, yo, it's for real? He's like, yeah, they're called the Neptunes. And I'm like, man, yo, that's crazy. I was so fascinated with their production, just being in Connecticut and then being in their city, like, was like, yo, I got to do this. And let's not even mention, now I'm in 10th grade, right? I'm in 10th grade. I'm a football player. I'm playing varsity football in 10th grade. And then Grinding comes out. You know what I'm saying? So
2002.
We playing. Yeah. I want to say it was still 01, though. I feel like it was
2002. 01. It was 2002. I remember that. It was 2002.
Okay, I got you. Only reason I feel like it was 01 because going into football season is a fall thing.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the song came out after football season. I just felt like it was my 10th grade football season. But I remember at some point us beating on our pads. You know what I'm saying? Being on our pads and, you know, we're hitting the Grinding beat before we, you know. I remember when the national anthem was playing, right? We'd be sitting there doing the national anthem. We go, grind it. You know what I'm saying? So all these Neptune productions, man, was like kind of the driving force behind just being a young athlete. You know what I'm saying? And then so then you mentioned like the Pesos and the M Watts and stuff like that. Like I was aware of them a couple years before I actually hit the scene. I did my first show 2007. I performed in 2007 at the Peppermint Beach Club. That was my first time ever getting behind a microphone and performing in front of a crowd. And I remember, you know, M. Watts and Peso Dollar and all, you know, a bunch of the local movements. You had Team Hood and PACVA Streets and a few other, you know, local. I think I want to say Sweet Pea, Pernell Whitaker, though, Sweet Pea's son had something to do with that show. I think he was like one of the promoters or something that put that show together. So, you know, just to be on the same stage with them was like, right, so I guess I'm a part of, you know, I'm a local artist now, but I still didn't get the same recognition as the M. Watts and Peso Dollars and stuff. But it wasn't until like Shaggy started doing his local lounge series, is when I started to get taken a little more serious, being in the same room with these local artists. So for a while, I kind of felt like I was a black sheep amongst those type of names and stuff. It was just like, and I was still trying to find myself too. You know, I think at the time, man, I was Twan Henny, a part of freaking Get Money Gangsters. You know what I'm saying? So it was, you know, still trying to find myself, man, and find an identity. And, you know, and VA, you know, this scene, you heard that stigma for a while, man, that there was like this identity crisis within the scene. Like, Virginia has no identity and everybody sounds like everybody or sounds like somebody else. It wasn't like any type of unique energy going on. But yeah, after a while, I started rubbing elbows with a lot of the local people that I looked up to and just wanted to get the same respect and recognition as. And that's what ended up happening.
Man, detailed. Very detailed and articulated with a lot of history in it, to punctuate, you know, your personal history with it, man. And so I'm going to drop a couple more gems in that you may not know, and you may know, that Timbaland and Pharrell used to be in a group together called Surrounded by Idiots in the early 90s.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and of course, Missy was with a group called Sista way back in the day in Portsmouth. And, of course, before she ended up going solo, with the Right Here Human Nature remix, and it was released in the spring of 1993. That was Pharrell on the SSWWUV when he used to work under Teddy Riley. And also, too, Teddy Riley had Future Studios out here, of which he was, you know, a freak. You know, Teddy came down here, I want to believe, in 89-90. Definitely one of the architects that will lay the foundation of what will become, you know, hip hop R&B, of course, with him inventing, you know, of course, with Guy, you know, New Jack Swing, you know, and that will lay the foundation for what Puffy would end up doing later on in terms of Bad Boy, when he would kind of take it a little step further from what Teddy did. You know, that's that Harlem shit right there, you know. So they pretty much really embedded it. When we look at the, and like you said, Hen, with VA, there is a history here that a lot of people don't know. But it's, and from the streets to the industry, you know, some of that success has eluded us because, you know, obviously, you know, of course, you could say that, for historical context, Ghoulie D, when he did Live Saturday Night, you know, when he dropped that in 86, that was considered the real first gangster rap album. Of course, 3-4 months later, Ice-T would drop Ryan Pays, you know, which would, you know, Ice-T will tell you himself, you know, this is coming from the West Coast, and of course, 88, you know, because Ice-T will tell you himself, he pretty much molded his vibe pattern after Schoolie D. But in 88, then you have Straight Outta Compton with N.W.A., which, like, kicks the whole door down for L.A. We don't have to speak on New York, because New York is really where hip-hop originated in terms of the culture and the music, as we know it today. Of course, Miami, you know, shout out to Uncle Luke and 2 Live Crew, what they did bringing the bass. You know, Atlanta had LaFace Records with Babyface and L.A. Reid, you know, was the Party City, you know, taking it back to the NFL with Deion Sanders playing for the Braves and the Falcons. And then, of course, Jermaine Dupri, what he would do with So So Def, you know, they would bring it to the next level. Of course, Jay Prince and Rap-A-Lot in Houston. It's just so many. And Virginia kind of got lost in it because for that time, we never really had an artist homegrown that ever really, during that early 90s era, really broke through when you began to see, you know, the hip-hop culture really go from an underground phenomenon to a mainstream ubiquity. But we got history. I mean, Ella Fitzgerald, the late great jazz singer, one of the best ever. She's from Newport News. You know, Wayne Newton, you know, legendary Las Vegas singer. He's from Richmond, Virginia. You know,
no, absolutely. So you got,
yeah.
You got Ruth Brown and Pearl Bailey, and yeah, man, the list definitely goes on, man. And you know, I'm sorry to cut you off, but
no, you're good. Please.
You know, when I was so one of the projects that you know, I'm a producer of was it's a film, a documentary film called Seven City Legacy. You know, produced
okay, tell us about
by Amway Productions. Yeah, so Seven City Legacy was, you know, just a research, putting some research in. I got with some college students, you know, some fellow colleagues from Norfolk State. And then, yeah, we just put together this this documentary that was bridging the gap with the local scene at the time, and just bridging that gap with the historical energy that has been in Hampton Roads. So, like you said, just what was his name? You said Ella Fitzgerald, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. What's your guy from chairman of the board? I forget his name.
You talking about Frank Sinatra?
No. Oh. Chairman of
the board. You said chairman of the board. I'm thinking that Rat Pack. Yeah. Yeah,
you know, just a little more time, that song. But, yeah, that guy right there, man, his name is a blur now, but, you know, he's right here from, I want to say Norfolk, like Huntersville or something like that. Yeah, so it's but Seven City Legacy, what we did, we talked about, like, the whole Church Street scene, I mean the old Granby Street and the history of Attic's Theater and stuff, and you know, and then we used that, we bridged the gap with, like I said, the scene at the time, with a lot of the local events that was going on. And I mean, the film you could actually still check out. It's on YouTube and it's called Seven City Legacy. And it's broken down, I want to say, into like 10, 11 parts. Yeah, man, and it's just good to know what has came through. You ever heard of Ray T. Jones?
No, not offhand. Cool.
Ray T. Jones, he was another one that was doing it big, man. Yeah, oh, my dad, he's tuned in right now. The general,
okay.
Yeah. He's a chairman of the board, yeah, and he put the general. I forget his actual real name.
You're talking about Gary, I'm thinking Gary U.S. Bonds offhand, but I don't think that's him.
You know what? That might be the name.
Okay.
Hey, if anybody, any one of my people tune in right now, hit me up, man, with a message, man, and get me. But yeah, Seven City Legacy, man. Please check that out. It was real informative, man, and it gave you some insight. I was able to actually sit down with my man Gene Thornton, also known as Malice of the Clips. You know, he invited me over to his house and. You know, we had a really good, I mean, we still have a good relationship, man, but, you know, I had, back in like 2012, he was like kind of mentoring me, man. And he would invite me over to his house, man, invite me to the studio, and we just build, and He would tell me what, you know, things he was planning on doing. I actually talked to him the same day, the morning that he announced that he was changing his name to No Malice. I actually, like, spoke with him that same morning, you know what I'm saying? So that's how close I was with him at the time, man. And just to be rubbing elbows with half of the clips, you know what I'm saying, was, man, that was big for me, man. That was big. You know, I'm still in my young 20s at the time. And, yeah, so, you know, our relationship really started with him just, you know, blessing that documentary with an interview. And the significance of that interview, too, we was able to actually, it was directed by Stephen D. Gale, somebody I played high school football with. We went to Norfolk State together. But, yeah, we were able to premiere the film at the Attic Theater, man. You know, and so that was just, you know, good vibes, man, and good energy at the time. And, yeah, man, still, you know, still keeping it going. And I was saying all that to piggyback off what you were saying, man, about just the history of, you know, the 757, you know, Hampton Roads. Prior to then, the modern day what people might know, like what started with Teddy Riley, you know what I mean? So, and then another fun fact too, man. So we talking Teddy Riley, right? A member of Guy. I'm very familiar with Guy. You know what I'm saying? Even though I'm, you know, I'm 37. I was born in 86. I actually had I got family in Queens. Queens, New York. And I remember actually going to my Aunt Claudette's house after church one day, and we're eating dinner with we're eating Sunday dinner with Damien Hall and his mother. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So yeah. So that was I was very fond of the whole New Jack Swing and Teddy Riley, man, and so to even move to Virginia Beach and realize that Teddy Riley's in Virginia Beach and know that Future Studios was right there by Princess Anne High School, my rival, you know, high school. You know, I remember going to summer school at Princess Anne is like, you know, just to know that Future Studios right there and I'm at the same school that Pharrell went to, you know what I'm saying? So that was pretty dope too, man. Yes, sir.
Talking about the clips, I want to ask you guys something. Since y'all stay in Virginia, right? Like, what was the impact like when the clips dropped that Lord Willing album?
Oh man, Lord Willing, bro. I'm still proud of Lord Willing to this day. You know what I mean? Because it just spoke like volumes. Like, first of all, let's talk about the Neptune sound, right? Just the Neptune sound to ride through this whole album, right? And then their sound, the best way I could explain their sound is it was like that unorthodox, spacey, you know what I'm saying? It's real synth heavy and you know, it's just all these, I call it like intergalactic music, intergalactic hip hop. You know what I mean? That's how I looked at it. Like, the Neptune sound reminded me of Sega Genesis Sonic the Hedgehog. I used to love the music that was on Sonic the Hedgehog. You know what I'm saying? I don't know if y'all, I mean, did y'all get with Sonic the Hedgehog at all?
Oh, yeah, old Sega Genesis days.
Yeah, man, if you go back and listen to Sonic the Hedgehog, listen to the sound scores and stuff on them games, it reminded me of Neptune sounds, you know what I'm saying? So to hear, I feel like the unique energy behind clips, right, you had them, I mean, every song they had, drug cocaine references and stuff like that, right? I felt like that's with, you had so many people trying to be, you know, spit that same content, but they wanted to do it like New York or Atlanta or, you know, LA, what, you know what I'm saying? Like these other areas. And there was no real identity. And this is just me speaking, you know, it was like, it was no real identity for that type of content here in the 757. It was all over the place, you know, but to put that type of content on those, that type of sound was what made it work, because it was so unorthodox. It was so like, man, what possessed them to even make these type of beats and think it would work? And that's what I felt like proud of, man. And so, I mean, from the intro of Lord Willing, you know what I'm saying? It was like, it just sounded so happy. You know what I'm saying? It sounded so cool. And then even when it got a little dark, you know, I'm from Virginia. We ain't shit to do but cook. You know what I'm saying? It was like the sound just still was unmatched to anything that you heard coming from rappers talking about streets and drugs and shit like that. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, it was a dope vibe, man.
Yeah.
That was that one beat on the album that got me. That's why I knew it was incredible. It was the joint they did with Fabulous, Comedy Central beat.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I ain't never heard nothing like that in my life.
Yeah, that was dope. Yep. That was definitely dope, man. All the beats, man. There was not one beat. There's not one song that I could say was like, yeah, this is trash. Like, everything, it just all made sonic sense to me. You know what I'm saying? No pun intended.
Yeah, man. When you think about what happened with them, and it was great to see them with the Neptunes, you know, by then the Neptunes pretty much were in full swing with their career. You know, the Clips, you know, they had their first single, you know, The Funeral, and the first, you know, and the B-side Got Caught Dealing, that was released on Elektra Records in terms of the promos. And they even got a video for The Funeral, but the problem was, you know, label politics, and the record didn't get released. This was in 1997. Shout out, you know, to Dion, you know, Dr. Dion and Nolfa, for those that know, you know, Dion Hester, you know, with the barbershop. You know, I seen, you know, Pusha and Malice up in there one night. You know, I was getting my hair cut. You know, so it's like, you know, I've seen them around every time. And I met those guys a few times. Always good dudes, always solid, always sincere. And I was so happy for them when Lord Willing got to drop in 2002. Once again, they reunited with the Neptunes and dropped the Heat Rock. You know, they're really, you know, really got everybody out there to really understand, like, you really have something, you know. And it was monumental to really see it from where they really began to, I mean, you basically took a beat of Locker Room Slamming Doors that, you know, it really was universal sound that you could make on a lunch table. It worked because it was the lead track, Grinding, was a song that everybody could relate to at a certain level, whether you were hustling or whether you were in the lunchroom in a cypher. And obviously they have both gone on to superstardom status, albeit, you know, some hiccups along the way for those in an area, you know what I'm talking about when I say that, but they made it through. And, you know, No Malice, you know, him and Push, you know, it's out of the bag now because they did a show in Chicago about a month ago. So they, you know, from what I was told, there is a new album coming. And, you know, but they've always represented VA, even though they were born in New York, you know, they came here and they've always raised the flag for us, carrying it. And it definitely than Star Wars. When you look at it from your side of it and from your own personal creativity, when you really started getting into the game of music, what did you learn in terms of what it took to your artistry, how to compose songs? What was it like being in the studio? And we already talked about what it was like when you first performed, but what was the process like before it actually led up to the performing and all of that?
I mean, the process leading up to that, it was just, you know, typical. I had a friend in high school who had his own studio equipment in the garage. Even though digging back further than that, man, my father was an MC. I mean, I don't even want to say what. He still is an MC. But
okay,
he was,
okay, get it from his daddy.
Yeah. My father, you know, he was doing his thing up in the Connecticut region, man, and he was known from there, New York City, all of that. Like, I have photos, to this day where he was in one of Curtis Blow's music videos, and he was in contact with Curtis Blow, and we talking 86, 87, like, I was a little baby, and so Curtis Blow actually listened to one of my dad's tapes, and he actually kept it, and he was trying to introduce him to Russell Simmons. You know, so that's just to show you, like, the talent and energy that, you know, my father had. But, you know, my father had to make some decisions. You know, my father, I want to say when I was born, he was 19. You know, mm-hmm. My mom was 17, my dad was 19. You know, they were young. And they got married young, and, you know, they were trying to do, you know, it came to a dilemma, like, yo, can he go, you know, pursue his dreams or stay home, be a family man? He really didn't want to, lose his family, man, and, you know, getting caught up in the whole music industry at the time. And so he just kind of, and he kept it going, but I think, you know, it's one of those situations, man. You get one shot, don't miss your chance to blow. And he literally was in the mix with Curtis Blow, you know what I'm saying? And but looking back at it and having conversations with my father over the years, it was like, you know, his gift and his dreams and ambitions, like, kind of planted a seed and his seat, you know, which is me, you know what I mean? Like, sometimes if you miss that calling, you know, and you pass the torch down to, you know, the next generation, it's as if, like, the torch is still lit. Like, you didn't really miss the calling. You just kind of opened the door for the next generation. And that's where I learned. That's where, you know, I had my dad's Yamaha keyboard and a tape recorder, and I'm writing songs and making, you know, trying to make my own little beat off the little sampler packs on the keyboard, you know. And I'm 8 years old doing this, mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so I always had that in me, and, you know, my dad always kept, you know, I remember he had the Cubase. Back in the late 90s, he had the Cubase, so he had his, I want to say, like, a little 4-track, 8-track, little tape, you know, tape deck recorder or whatever, if I'm articulating it correctly. And I remember he had his sampler machine, and I just sit there, and I was just utilizing that. And I remember being, like, 12 years old, and the first beat that I ever was able to loop and sample, It was. I remember it was three of them I was working on, and I'm 12 years old. And one of them was that it was a Diggable Planet sample, right? It was a Diggable Planet. I want to say it was called Something Comb or something.
Blowout Comb.
Right, boom.
That
exactly.
was the second album, Blowout Comb. That came out in 94, I believe, 94, 95.
Okay, bad. And it was a little loop up there that I caught. And then it was Shaq, you know, I was a Shaq fan, basketball and rap, you know what I'm saying? You know, so his second album, you know, the you Can't Stop the Rain album.
Yeah.
I remember.
That was 96, 97, I believe.
Yep, exactly. And I remember catching a loop up there, you know, and like, and when I would catch these little loops, I would go to my dad and get him to listen to it, and it felt like I made a beat, even though I was just catching a loop, you know what I'm saying? And so, you know, it's just planting seeds for when I got older and I was able to get in the studio, and like I said, so I really was able to really, really learn the game working with my boy Uriah, you know, the owner of the Grind and Pray brand. But I got connected with him, and I just watched him for 10 years just make beats. And, you know, I watched him on Logic and stuff, and me just being a student, just watching over the years. And then finally I was just ready to get these certain sounds out of my head. And I remember, you know, God bless his soul, man, but my stepson, yo, we were at Guitar Center one day, and he's looking at this, it was an MPC, not an MPC, it was called an MPD. And, you know, it had these pads where you could, you know, hook it up USB to the Logic and make beats. But he said that he wanted it, and I was like, well, I'll buy it if you promise to make beats. And I remember buying it, right? But once I hooked it up and I started messing around with it, I found myself still sitting there 9 hours later. Like 9 hours I'm locked in, and I just was like, man, I made my first beat, and I was stuck ever since. And that first one was good, but then I started making, it was like a good year of trash, you know what I'm saying, that I was making. But then I was able to revisit it, you know, and learn some new things and be around other people that make beats and shoes. And, you know, I was able to take it another level, man. Then, you know, in my latter days, I was able to connect with Raheem from Grandmaster Flash and Fury 5.
Okay.
To where, like, still to this day, that he's not just a mentor, but he's like, he's the big homie. He's like big bro. He's like, I could call him and we can, you know, not just musically, but we can talk about, like, we can talk spiritual. We can talk everything. You know what I'm saying?
What's up?
Huh? Oh, right. No doubt. So, yeah, we would, like, I mean, our connection is so deep, man. This how deep it is. All right. My father being an MC, right? My father, at 14 years old, you know, my father's like 3 years younger than Raheem. And I remember growing up and my father, like, my parent, I was very aware of who Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five was. I heard their music growing up. My parents played it, all of that. And, of course, The Message is one of the greatest songs of all time. You know what I'm saying? So, I remember, and the way my father would explain it, he was like, you know, Grandmaster Flash and Furious Five, man, was like, he looked up to them as like superheroes. They were like superheroes to him. Like, they made him want to, actually get into hip hop. And my father had his sneakers, his Adidas. He had his DJ set or whatever, and he had posters on his wall. And a couple of those posters was Grandmaster Flash and Furious Five, their shows and stuff. And it was there to inspire him to get on that same level. And he said he remember his first time being in Waterbury, Connecticut at, I want to say that it was called like Skate Odyssey or something like that, or it was a skating rink out there. And he's a 14-year-old kid watching Grandmaster Flash and Furious Five, and he knew that's what he wanted to do. Now, fast forward 30-something mm-hmm. years later, I'm coming from Connecticut because, you know, my mom had just passed, and we had a family get-together, and, you know, got her ashes and stuff, you know. And as I've come back to Virginia, and I'm 33 years old at this time. I've come back to Virginia, and I got somebody to say, yo, I got somebody, you know, I want you to meet. His name Raheem. He's from this group called Grandmaster Flash Furious Five. I'm like, man, I know who that is. You know what I'm saying? So we pull up, you know, I go to the spot he was at, man. And from there, I'm just like, yo, pleasure to meet you, yo. You were like a superhero to my father. And I'm just coming back from Connecticut, like, and my mom, and I remember my mom, right? Anytime I would get high when I was a teenager or whatever, my mom would say, you want to smoke reefer? You need to get a job, learn to be a street sweeper. You know what I'm saying? That was like, she always used to quote that to me. So I thought it was like profound after she passed away to come back and this is who I'm in the room with. I'm with not just a legendary, like this is like, I wouldn't be pursuing a career to be a recording artist if it wasn't for a pioneer such as this guy from the Furious Five. You know what I'm saying? Like, we know their history. We know that they broke some barriers now. You know what I'm saying? So I'm telling him, like, yeah, man, I'm 33 years old, man. My mom just passed, blah, blah, blah. So Raheem looks at me, right, and he says, yo, you know what's crazy, yo? He's like, I lost my mom, too, at 33 years old.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, we had that connection. And from there, man, it was just like, all right, look, I said, I got to call my dad right now. So I called my dad, and I said, Dad, yo, guess who I'm sitting here with? And he's like, who? I'm like, yeah, I'm with Raheem, yo. And he's like, Raheem? Raheem? Furious Five? I'm like, yeah. And then, boom, I put them on the phone, and my dad just, like, man, they end up just talking, man, and it was like they were able to go back to 1983, that night when he first seen them at the Skate Odyssey, and it was just, like, it was up from there, and that was, like, one of my favorite moments in life, was able to put my father on the phone with somebody that he looked up to as a hero. And you know, so from that point on, I, COVID came and I spent a lot of time with Raheem. I mean, he stayed at my house a couple of times, man. I went up to Jersey, went to stay with him. He ended up producing a song for me on my last project, my very last record called One Monkey. He produced that joint. I got other tracks. I got stuff that I produced for him that's unreleased. We got stuff that, you know, we got, you know, different surprises that we got, you know, in the works right now. And I was just happy to see him on that stage at the Grammys, man, being honored. You know, I mean, this guy's a part of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, you know what I'm saying? And to see him representing hip-hop on that Grammy stage and just to know that, dang, yo, I was just staying at his house not too long ago, man. And there's no rapper, no MC that you can talk to, you know, that has came out in the last 30 years that cannot pay homage to contributions that this man has made. So, and like I said, that's the big homie. That's the OG, man. And that's kind of like, you know, who I'm rocking with right now, man, just on the grander scheme of things.
Man, I mean, what are the odds if you get to connect with, such a historical figure, and not even the fact that you connect, but y'all have a genuine friendship. Definitely, as we saw, I believe the message came out in 1984. So it's definitely a landmark record in terms of really embodying what hip-hop was in terms of being what will be termed as the CNN of the street. You know, this is from what everything that they were talking about was what was going on at the time. You know, if you were from any hood in America, you could relate to it. When you look at, we're in the 50th year of hip-hop in King, when you think about what you said about how he is one of the legends, one of the pioneers, where do you think the state of hip-hop is today in terms of a lot of the newer artists? Not all, because some really do know the history, but some of the new artists who don't know the history, and even worse, are not trying to learn it.
Can you repeat that question? I'm sorry.
I said, what do you think about it with some of the artists today who are not trying to understand the significance of figures, you know, such as him and so many other pioneers who have laid the groundwork for this thing that we do today, whether we, you know, do podcasts, whether we're writers and journalists, or whether we're, you know, entrepreneurs like yourself, and, you know, performers like yourself.
Honestly, man, I think it's a very important thing that needs to be, like, put on the table. You know, like, you should know your history. I don't care if you're a drill rapper, I don't care if you're doing all this harmony singing rap and all this stuff like that. Like, you're still supposed to know the origins of why you even get to have an opportunity to be a recording artist in urban music, you know what I'm saying, as they would call it, you know, but especially in hip hop, you know, like, I think it's really uncivilized, man, to like not know the message and not know who the Furious Five is or the Treacherous Three and, you know what I'm saying, Kool Herc, and, you know, just that whole, it's a culture. You're supposed to know your forefathers, your leaders, and, you know, and I think that has, I believe that I am a part of that. I'm a part of making sure the history is out there. You know, as somebody such as yourself, I see how much of a hip hop historian you are and how good you are at, you know, putting, you know, the X's and O's out there of and when, what, or where, why, and how. And I feel like I have to do the same thing. There's been plenty of times that I've sat with Raheem, yo, and I've had to, like, fuss him out. Like, nigga, do you know who you are, though? Like, do you, you know what I'm saying? Yo, don't let the game, like, make you not remember who you are, bro. Like, nah, yo, we wouldn't be doing this if it wasn't for you. You know what I'm saying? And there's, you know, I feel like there has been, like, this whole, like, protection of, well, you know, hey, these kids don't know what's up or whatever, man. You know, but I take great pride in the fact that, you know, my 8-year-old son, you know, I got footage of him on YouTube. You know, when he's 5 years old, 4 or 5 years old, and he's sitting in a hotel, and Raheem is showing him how to make a beat and how to stay on rhythm. And then my 5-year-old son, he's like 4 at the time, and then he's sitting there trying to like freestyle and rap to Raheem. This is you know, we're talking third generation. We're talking about, this little boy's grandfather was a 14-year-old kid watching the same man that now he's rapping and making beats, you know, with him and stuff, you know, and he's taking great pride in that. And I'm like, yo, this is what culture is supposed to be. This ain't about Hollywood stars and Grammys and MTV Jam of the Week. Nah, this is culture right here. You know what I'm saying? This is elder showing the third generation how to sharpen a bow and arrow. You feel what I'm saying?
How to go hunt on them for that heat. Yeah, exactly.
Right, exactly. And that's what I'm saying. So it's like, you know, I think there should be more control within this culture to make these kids, man, make these new generations know, like, where you came from, yo. You know what I'm saying? Where this came from, yo. If it wasn't, you know, just like Lord Tariq and Peter Guns used to say, if it wasn't for the Bronx, this rap shit probably never would be going on. But we know it even goes further than that. But let's, you know, just, you know, won't get too far, you know, veer off on it. But, you know, you get where I'm coming from.
Yeah. And you know, one thing about it, y'all, and me and my brother, we talked on air with countless, you know, guests. We talked about it off air. When we look at the situation now, the metrics are so diametrically different in terms of what it requires to get on. You know, back in the day, like, you had to literally go jump through the hoops, fucking navigate the jungle, climb the mountain, and jump off the airplane. And that was just to get in the room, just to even get an audition, you know, and then you still had to go through the A&Rs, you know, you had to go through all the processes in terms of the label, getting signed to a label, in terms of them actually thinking that you might have something. Fast forward to today, with the expedited nature of what modern technology facilitates in terms of not necessarily having to wait, which is great because modern technology has helped us out. That's what helps us do this show. You got a lot of artists now, y'all, who pretty much, they don't go through the stages of what it takes to practice and really polishing to get good. You know, their thing is, it's become disposable now in parts of the culture where everybody just wants to go and make a song, and they don't really care if it's good or not, just as long as they can get out there. And they don't always respect it, even out here sometimes. You know, a lot of the, when you look at some, even the, I won't say new generation because they've been around, but when you look at guys like Knox, who's a living legend, representing Norfolk, shout out to Norview. You know, when you look at guys like even lesser knowns who are still dope, like Lee Major, you know, he's the one that did the realest, you know, the realest of the gifts on Jay-Z's Blueprint 3. You know, he did that track. You know, you still got artists out here who are still, and producers who are still, you know, who are embedded here. You know, Nicole Ray, you know, she spent time here. She claims Virginia is her home. You know, dropped a bomb-ass album, Make It Hot, back in 1998. You know, it's definitely, but anywhere you come from, you have to understand where the legends are, the foundations, you know, in L.A. You know, Dr. Dre, you know, I mean, world-class record crew, of course. You know, shit, man, Mixmaster Spade, all those legends, you know, Toddy T, you know, It's just, the list goes on and on. No matter where you're from, there's going to be somebody that was doing it before you did, and that you should always recognize and respect it, and, you know, acknowledge them as being the ones that paved the way for you today to do what you do. So we've gotten to the music aspect of it, of your history, and the clothing line. Tell us about how that, you know, became, you know, how that was birthed.
All right, so the clothing line, Faith Clothing Brand, I mean, prior to that, you probably remember I was working with, I was helping expand a brand called Grind and Pray.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which is, that's my boy, Uriah. You know, he's the owner of that brand, started in Petersburg, Virginia. And I was basically, you know, helping my brother. And I bought the brand out here to Virginia Beach. And that's how I was able to get started on, with my store at Lynn Haven Mall. I'm sorry, I'm sitting here looking at messages coming in. That's why I'm stuttering a little.
It's all good.
I started a kiosk in Lynn Haven Mall selling Grind Prey. And, you know, that was an experience. I was learning. I never really aspired to sell fashion or, you know, retail anything. You know, that was just a different calling that had came in my life. So as we were progressing with Grind and Pray, you know, it became a learning experience. And by the time we were about 6 or 7 months in, we just ended up going separate ways. And so at the time I was transitioning to, like, all right, what am I doing? Am I going to give this kiosk up in the mall now that, you know, we've gone separate ways? I have no product in here to sell. And I remember there was somebody in the mix of the situation who actually was quote unquote trying to, like, do me a favor and see if they could get me out of my lease in the mall. And after I renewed it for another year, and I remember the leasing manager was like, nah, yo, you renewed for another year. You're going to have to sell a different product or something. You just can't, you know, get out of your lease. But, you know, a little backstory. I remember when I was going through my learning experiences with the way the business was being ran when I was doing the Grind Prey stuff. All right, let me just be straightforward. The way it was being ran was like, what I learned now is, like, you know, when you have a brand and you're trying to promote it and get it off the ground, especially in a mall at a kiosk, whether it's a, not just clothing, a new product, period.
Right.
You gotta hustle that joint. You know what I'm saying? You can't just expect people to just come and support it and buy it, and it's not in demand if people don't know what it is. And that's the significance of having a kiosk. So yeah, Grind and Pray was, you know, it was becoming popular, and, you know, Trey Songz put it on and his mom was endorsing it, and, you know, they're from Petersburg, but, you know, bringing it out here to Virginia Beach, it was like one of them situations where, yeah, in the beginning it was cool because it was something new. It was 2019. So COVID hadn't hit yet, so people were still outside, people were shopping. I started in March, so people were getting their tax returns. I mean, I made great money the first 2 months, but then it was like that third month, it was, you know, I was in the negatives. But the way the business was being ran was like Grand Prix was Tommy Hilfiger and the kiosk was Macy's.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't do it like that. That kiosk is there to help catch foot traffic to promote the brand and eventually get it on Macy's level promotion and advertisement and people coming to buy the brand in demand, you know what I'm saying? But at the time, it wasn't working like that. And it just didn't fit the business mode of how it was going at the time. But once again, I was learning, and it was like, okay, I was buying like wholesale retail, like so I would pay him like a wholesale price, and I would sell it at a retail value. But it was on me, so like I didn't necessarily own the product. I was helping push the product, but I was in it like alone. And me and him have had conversations about this like after, so I'm not revealing anything that he, you know, me and him have not come to grips and understanding that, yeah, dang, we was fucking up. But looking back at it, it was like, nah, we was supposed to be together hustling it together and pushing it together. So by the time, you know, we went our separate ways, when I was going through all of that, I remember trying to figure out, yo, I need to figure out something that I can call my own and make money on the side, you know, at this kiosk while I'm helping push that. And I was like, I need to think of something that kind of fits that whole grind and pray mode. And one night I'm driving, and then it was just like, man, faith for all individuals that's hustling. That was the first thing that came to me. But then I ended up telling one of my peoples about it, and he was just like, nah, yo, like, say for all individuals that hustle, period. Because now you can, we talking doctors, we talking lawyers, we talking strippers and basketball players and athletes, you know what I'm saying? Everybody in all types of life, you know what I'm saying? You know, you got to have faith, you know what I'm saying? Like, but what is your faith if you're not putting the work in? Hustle, you know, and that's the acronym for all individuals that hustle. That's faith. So I sat on that for a while, just trying to figure out, like, all right, maybe I could come up with my own shirt and I'd sell it with the Grind and Pray, and just to kind of help, you know, get some more funds while I'm doing this business or whatever. And so when we went our separate ways, I remember having a conversation with my mother, and my mother was like, okay, you can't get out of your lease. She said, what was the name of that brand you was thinking of that one time? And I was like, faith for all individuals that hustle. She was like, all right, so stop playing. It's time for you to have faith. She said, you done helped so many people all your life. You done put people first and help them take off and help them, and you done played the behind the scenes, and you bought, you know, it's the first to come last and the last to come first. It's your turn now. So she's like, do what you got to do, focus, and get it done. So, you know, so I sat, I know, like, the kiosk at the mall was, like, empty for, like, 2 weeks, and people literally thought I went out of business. But I was telling them, now I got something new about to drop. And then, boom, you know, I had my girl. She helped me, you know. She used her credit card to get some shirts. And I paid a guy to press the shirts up. And then, boom, that was the launch of Faith, September 13th, 2019. And put it out there, man. And then it just kept, I mean, it from the jump, man, it worked. And I've had, I mean, ups and downs, and I had to go through a learning experience with that. I didn't aspire to do this. This is all calling. I mean, I was banned from Lynn Haven Mall when I was 16, you know what I'm saying? So to be there now, running a business with such a powerful, positive message, you know, I even had to figure out what the brand was. You know, I just knew it was a brand, but I had to later learn that, yo, this is a sports brand. This is, man, this is like Nike and Adidas. Matter of fact, this is bigger than Nike and Adidas because, you know why? Nike, the Nike owner and the Adidas owner, they both had to have faith and hustle to get to where they're at. So it's like I use the sports to push that message, but it goes beyond sports. It's with whatever you need to put your faith in. A lot of times when people see it, you know, I've dealt with this in the mall. They'll see that big word faith, right? And they might think it's a church thing or a religious thing or whatever. And I say, hey, it's cool. You can wear it to church and you can, you know, use it for your religion and all of that. But religion don't own the word faith. You need faith when you get in your car and go from Chesapeake, Virginia to New York City. You need faith in the drivers around you. You got to have faith in the car. You got to have faith that your car is going to make it. You know what I'm saying? You got to have faith when you go order a sandwich from Chick-fil-A. You got to have faith in that cook. The cook is cooking it right. You got to have faith in your wife. You know, the wife got to have faith in her husband. You know, the team has to have faith in their coach that, the you know, and their teammates and stuff like that. You see what I'm saying? But most importantly, above anything else, you got to have faith in yourself. Because it starts with you. If you don't got faith in that person that you're looking at in the mirror, yo, then how you going to believe, how you going to have faith in anything else, yo, above you or beside you, if you can't even believe in that person that you're looking at in the mirror? But, you know, so the analogy I like to use is, hey, look, this is what faith is. Faith is like having a baseball bat, right? And the pitcher's getting ready to pitch that ball. You got to believe that you can hit that ball. But this is for all individuals that hustle. So you're not going to be able to hit that ball if you're not doing this one thing. And what do you think that is?
No wavering faith that you can hit that home run.
You got to have a belief system.
You got to swing the bat, man. You got to swing the bat. You can't walk. You breaking up a little bit. Hold on.
Yeah, sorry about that. What I was saying was, if you don't have that belief system, you ain't going to get far at all in anything. Like, even if the eyes don't look on your favor, you got to, even if I step on the basketball court, and I got to tell myself, I'm better than Michael Jordan. I don't believe
it. Really?
People don't believe it. It's obvious, but
right.
I got to tell myself that.
Right, right, right. You know, and it's just there's also a dictionary definition of faith. There's different, you know, definitions of it, but it says full confidence. It's confidence in something or someone or something. You know what I mean? My little son, he was 7 years old, and they had to do a vocabulary day parade or whatever. He chose the word faith. And it says, why did you choose the word faith? He said, I choose the word faith because my daddy has a brand about that, right? And then they had to define it. And in the definition, it said confidence in someone or something. And I was like, yo, that's so dope that the kids can actually understand what faith is. Because if you would have asked me at 8 years old, the only answer I could have said was, oh, it's your walk with Jesus Christ. You know what I'm saying? I only knew it in a religious context. I didn't know that faith is a thing, is that substance that you just need on a daily, you know, like, I mean, people who worship Buddha or people who are atheists or, you know, whatever walk of life they're in, they still got to have some faith, though. You know what I'm saying? They got to have faith no matter what it is. They personally, their personal spiritual guide is. All I know is, all right, you just better be able to put work behind that faith that you're talking about. You know what I'm saying? Because, you know, you can holler at, you know, believing this, that, and the third, but if your action ain't matching up with all that shit you talking, then I ain't even trying to hear it. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, that's the most important thing, man.
I mean, like the Bible says, faith without work is dead. And anything that you do, you have to understand that there is work involved with it. You know, like you talked about how, you know, what you were doing in terms of, you know, getting your clothes online when, you know, you took that leap to do it and how, you know, the work you put in behind it. I mean, it's not an accident that you've been successful as you have been. You know, your mother saw it. Your dad sees it. You know, your son is watching. You know, you're inspiring people consciously and subconsciously with your message, with your approach, and with the brand that gives definition. It is the visual representation of everything that you embody in terms of that. When we correlate it to a music level, that's what a lot of these artists have to understand. You just can't drop shit out there in terms of just hoping that it catches. Faith is one thing in it, but you got to put the work into it in terms of understanding how it's going to reach the people. Do you have something that everybody can relate to? You know, and that's where we see some of these artists today where they're making songs. It's good for a minute, but then they wash out. Why? Because they're not putting the work behind it to sustain the initial buzz. Mm-hmm. You know, it's about saying, look, you know, you may have faith that you can do it, but I'm like, that's fine. So I'm like, are you going to put the work in to make sure that you can continue with it? When you look at the state of hip hop today, and
I want to add one more thing too. The most important element of it is, you know, the faith is more significant when you're ready to give up. Or when it does look dark. You know, people think faith is just, you know, oh, yeah, everything's going good for me because, you know, I got faith. All right, that's cool and all, but let me hear about the dark part of your testimony. Let me hear about when you thought that everything was done. And if you don't have that story for me, then your faith ain't even real. Because you know what? Faith that ain't tested is not real. If it's faith, it's going to get tested. You see what I'm saying? There's no real successful person that you're going to hear about. Like, you know, you hear about the Jordan getting cut from his high school basketball team. Or the times where Steve Harvey had to, you know, take $20 and drive up to New York City and sleep out of his car and stuff like that. You know what I'm saying? And I mean, the stories go on and on about, you know, your successful people. And can't one of those people tell you that it was just this easy cakewalk? And so when it comes to people talking about their testimony of faith, I want to hear about that moment where you was about to give up. And or you felt like giving up, or you felt like you couldn't do it anymore, it wasn't, you know, working out for you, because it's those moments that you actually get to find out what faith really is and why it's that substance that was given to us from, you know, the Most High, you know, the Creator. So that's one thing I have to add when it comes to faith, man. It's going to get dark. You're going to feel like, you know, it's over or this and the third, and that's the time you really got to use that faith.
Yeah, and other people. And I think if I got that story, if in addition to our story with Jordan, if I got it right, I think he did get cutted that year, but I believe they won the state championship the next year. He made the team the next year and they won state. You know, with Steve Harvey, you know, look where he's at now in terms of
there's no easy way to the top. You're going to have to work. I mean, you know, we even, you know, look at Puffy. For all the things that have happened, you know, one thing we will say about Puff, he works. And Puff has battled a lot to get to where he is. You know, you know, from the CCNY tragedy, you know, and, of course, you know, the situation with that happened at Uptown Records with Andre Harrell. Shout out to Dev Young for telling us that story in detail. Y'all can check that out online, too, on the YouTube channel where he talks about it. But one thing about it is there's a tenacity. There's what they call that it factor that cannot be taught. You know, it's the unyielding resolve and unwavering belief that no matter what, you know, you're going to make it through. And that's how, even with this show, you know, we've had our, you know, ups and downs with it, you know, but one thing about it, with King's Vision, you know, we've all navigated it, you know, we've been able, we're pushing, you look, you're on, what, 560th show, you know, so it's like.
Yeah, that's a pleasure, man. Congrats on that, too.
Yeah, man, we appreciate it. You know, we're pushing. Yeah, you know, we're pushing 600. You know, it's like, you know, so we understood the mission. We knew the assignment, and we knew there was something we had to accomplish, just like you have. When you look at, you know, doing so many different things, being dad, being an artist, being a businessman, what would be the advice you give to entrepreneurs and artists coming up, you know, who are trying to either, you know, sell merchandise or be an artist or do both in addition to parenthood?
Purpose, yo. Figure out what your purpose is. Because there's things that we are passionate about and there's things that we have a purpose with, you know what I mean? And I say it's like answering a calling, right? Figure out what that calling is, because if you take care of that first, and it comes with growth and just being obedient to the path. Once you figure out what your calling is, then there's nothing that's going to be able to stop you from there. You know, anything that you're passionate about will be at your hand, you know, it'll be there for you, you know what I'm saying? But you gotta answer your calling first, you know, because, you know, there might be certain things that, you know, just like, hey, at one time you couldn't tell me that I wasn't gonna go to the NFL because football was, I mean, it served a purpose for the time. When I look back at it, it's one of those things that kept me active, it kept me disciplined. It taught me teamwork. It taught me how to be a leader. It told me how, hey, if my partner drops the ball, pick it up. You know what I'm saying? Like, I learned so much through sports, and it served its purpose at the time. But you couldn't tell me that, oh man, yeah, I'm gonna be playing on Sundays. But what happens once you figure out that's not your calling in life, you know what I'm saying? So now you got to figure out the next step. You know what I'm saying? Some people, they'll get lost in the sauce trying to chase the wrong thing. And so, you know, I get a lot of people who will come to me and they'd be like, yo, I want to start a clothing brand. I'd be like, all right, so what's the brand? What is it? It's like, well, I ain't really thought about it yet. I'm like, okay, well, you're already done. Like, you done already fucked up, because you just want to start a clothing brand but you don't even know what it is. See, I didn't want to start a clothing brand. I just had a message that translated to a clothing brand. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just had a message that translated to a clothing brand, you know. So it's kind of one of those things that fell on my lap because I just walked the path. I walked the line. I did what I had to do. I kept my hustle up. I stayed focused. I didn't quit the path. I didn't just veer away without trying to figure out, okay, why am I here? What am I doing this for? But like I said, pushing that grind prey was only a stepping stone, you know, for me to figure, all right, look, I'm going to be eventually pushing my own clothing line that I literally had to start. Lynn Haven Mall told me I had to come up with another product or, you know, I will be breaching the contract and I couldn't get out the lease. So mm-hmm. It literally happened. It just happened. I didn't say, oh man, I see this guy starting a brand or that guy got a clothing brand, so I want to do it too. And that's what fucked the rap game up. That's what fucked hip hop up because people see other people doing it and it's working out, and it's just like, oh, I want to rap too. And it distorts the people that are really called out to do it, you know what I'm saying?
Mm.
And not, you know, so, I mean, and not just rappers. I'm talking about, it's easy, you know, the consumers, your everyday consumer can pick up a camera now and shoot some stuff. Now they're calling themselves a director. Now they're calling themselves, you know, oh, I shoot videos. And you know how many times I meet people that tell me they shoot videos? I'm standing there in that mall and, you know, oh, yeah, I charge this and the third. And then I see the video and it's some ass grease. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm like, maybe you shouldn't be doing videos or keep trying, you know what I'm saying? And slow down on your prices and promoting that this is what you do. Maybe get out there and find somebody you can be an understudy of if this is what you really want to do. Find somebody who really do it and get some help. Get some, you know, get some tutorials, do something. Like, if this is what you truly want to do, you know what I'm saying? Otherwise, let the people who really are gifted and called out to do it, like, handle that role and you figure out something else to do. So that, to answer your question, man, you know, I know I could be long-winded. Answer your question.
No, it's okay.
Make sure it's your calling, man. Don't just do it because you see it's working for other people and you want to do it. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's why, I mean, I'm a jack of many trades and I could really do a lot of things, but I really try to stick to what I'm called out to do. That's why I fell back from the music, how I was putting it out. You know, I was heavily involved with making sure I kept my music out there, but I had to sit back for a little while because my clothing brand was becoming a major main source of everyday life, my income, a way I'm feeding my family at this point, you know what I'm saying? And then I see the next level of it. I see the calling. I see the fruits of the labor, you know what I'm saying? So I know that this is a real thing, and I'm consistent with it, you know what I'm saying? I'm consistent, and there's been many times I've been wanting to, like, man, I just want to take a break from it. I don't want to do this, you know. But guess what? My black ass got to still get up and do it. You know what I'm saying? I don't take no days off, man. This hustle is a 7-day-a-week hustle for me. So, just like Ice Cube said in an interview not too long ago, bro, if you're not ready to put 3 to 5 years into it without seeing, like, a return, without, you know, if you're not ready to put 3 to 5 years in without making a profit, then quit now. because anything that's worth greatness is going to, there's like this universal 3 to 5 year rule. Just like a child. A child, you don't put a child, when does a child start pre-K, preschool? Like 4 or 5 years old, right?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You got to wait till that child is able to develop the mechanics to actually crawl, then walk, and be able to tie their shoe and put words together. And you don't send them off to school before they can do any of that, because now when they're ready to that fourth and fifth year, now they can actually develop their own language and understanding to where they can come home and tell you what they did in school, or if somebody touched them the wrong way or something like that. You know, it, same thing with high school. That 4 years, college is set up for 4 years. To get the master's is 8 years. You know what I'm saying? It's that universal, infinite, you know, circle. You know what I'm saying? So if you're not willing to put the 3 to 5 years in and you're looking for a quick come up, get out of it ASAP. You know what I'm saying? And make sure it's your calling.
Yeah, man. I mean, and it's, you know, and just in a sense of, you know, monetary, but just making progress, you know, like, you know, with King starting off the Cuff Radio, you know. How long was it, King, before we got our real first big guest in?
Was he back?
You said what now?
Was he back?
Yeah, when you start off the Cuff Radio, how long was it before you got your really the first big guest in?
I think it was a year.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was a year in, you know, and, it was a year in, you know, so it was like, and from there, you know, he just kept building a brand. I got on in 2017, you know, been with the team ever since, honored to be so, but it's like, you know, but one thing about it, and, you know, King has a background in journalism, you know, he did stuff for Raucous, a lot of these independent labels where he would write stuff for them. You know, definitely a gifted writer in all aspects of the culture. And one thing about it, we tell people, you know, this ain't easy what we do. You know,
right.
This is not easy. You know, we got a lot of help behind the scenes. You know, and a lot of it we do ourselves. But it's all about, you know, people don't see that we got to talk to these people. We got to reach out to managers or artists. You know, we got to put all this stuff together in terms of logistics. And everybody thinks you just sit down and talk to celebrities. Yeah, we do. But there's a lot of planning and going into this. You know,
right, right.
You know, and people got to understand, too. You know, when you're actually having a show, you really got to be able to talk to people on the level of really, really, really understanding where you really want to go in terms of the direction of it. You know, you don't want the low-hanging fruit of frivolousness. You really want to be able to make these, you know, make the audience feel connected in a certain way. You want your artists to feel respected and that you're knowledgeable and respectful of what they do. And we
right.
see too many, you know, people, just like with rappers now, because podcasting has become the new way for a lot of people. They want to get out there and just say that, you know, they're podcasters. And our thing is, okay, you know, how many shows have you done? Who have you had on your show? You know, what do you talk about on the show? You know, it's not to throw shade at anybody, but it's like we respect what we do. We respect so many of our, you know, contemporaries, Doggy Diamond, the late, great Combat Jack, you know, of course, shout out, you know, to baby girl Kenya Ware out in L.A., you know, with her new joint, California Love Podcast, of course, you know, the Gangster Chronicles, you know, everybody out there who's doing it, you know, Di Lansky, you know, our boy, he does his thing too, you know. So this is an art form, just like music, just like fashion. It is an art. And you really have to know where you're aiming with it in terms of finding your audience for it. When you look at it with your line here, pretty much, and shout out to Lynn Haven Mall, Virginia Beach, definitely one of the spots, you know, I like to frequent a lot, you know, just, you know, kind of just seeing what's going on out there. Down the line, pretty much would you think of taking, you know, it on a national level, that the right deal came along with a distributor or what have you, or you're good with where you're at right now?
Man, that's an excellent question because you never want to be complacent with where – oh, hold on.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I had turned on the car and it had got connected. All right, can you hear me?
No, you're good. You're good. Yeah, we can hear you.
All right. So yeah, and one thing especially – you know, it'd be a different case if, like, this was a, you know, I've traveled a lot. So I've been to, you know, the LAs and Miamis and New York and Vegas and all type of places, right, where I see even down to Raleigh, like North Carolina and stuff, right, I see the different hospitality with consumers, right? Being in Lynn Haven Mall, Virginia Beach, Virginia, is unique, you know, because it's like a glass ceiling to it. So to answer your question, yes, it's time for me to spread nationally, internationally, you know what I'm saying? I've had people ask, well, what about your web presence? You know, how's your web sales and stuff? And it's like, you know, yeah, I'm looking more into doing more marketing, on the website and stuff. It's like a double-edged sword to it because I'm such a physical hustler. I'm in your face with it. I'm 1993 with it. You know what I'm saying? I'm on the block with it. Like, for real. Like, I'm in Lynn Haven Mall treating that joint like 125th in Lenox Harlem. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's how it feels to me. Like, hey, y'all on my block. What's up, yo? This my product right here. What you doing today? You know what I'm saying? We can have the approach like, hey, how you doing, sweetheart? I like your braids. I think it'll go good with one of my shirts. Can you come check it out real quick? Come here, yo. Oh, you got the purple J's on, yo. I got something cool for you, bro. You know what I'm saying? Or come to the, you know, hey, bro, don't be too cool out here, yo. Come holler at me real quick. Or, you know, sometimes, you know, they'll ignore you. They'll ignore you and won't say anything. I'm like, man, you're fat, ugly ass, yo. And then they'll turn around and say something. I'm like, hey, I was just trying to get your attention, man. Hey, what's up, man? Safe clothing brand, blah, 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 blah. You know what I'm saying? Like, but I can also say that I didn't have that skill in the beginning. I had to develop that skill. But put me anywhere now, like, I don't care where it is. Like, I'm going to have that hustle ethic, you know what I'm saying, where – you're going to – one thing about the physical hustle is all your impressions are real. You know that they're real. Versus online, you know what I'm saying, they'll give you the impressions, and the impressions are, oh, yeah, this is how many people your brand was visible to, and it was seen in this demographic, this geographical location, and blah, 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 blah. You know, all that's cool, the analytics, that's what it's called, right? Yeah. But at least I know – when I'm standing in this one spot 8 hours out of the day, that all my impressions are real. I know who ignored me. I know who saw it. I know who didn't see it. I know the seeds planted. You know what I'm saying? Now, don't get me wrong. Internet's cool because, you know, I'm very thankful to wake up in the morning to an internet cell. And, you know, whoever's listening, www.faithclothingbrand.com. internet sales is very resourceful, you know what I'm saying, because it's the World Wide Web. So
I would never
shit on that part of it. But like I said, it's for all individuals that hustle, bro. And man, I just love that aspect of it, yo, that part of it, yo. I love getting in, yo, you know what I'm saying? I love seeing the old white lady, right? The old white lady who, she wouldn't buy the brand. But fuck that, I'm going to holler at her anyway. Hey, how you doing, ain't you Miss Barbara from Washington Middle School? And she's like, huh? Nah, I thought you were Miss Barbara, yo. Nah, man, I'm sorry. I was just trying to get your attention. This is my brand right here. You know what I'm saying? Like, for real, yo, whatever works, yo, that's a part of the hustle. Because it's about getting as many people to see this brand. Now, I'm also, like, in the mix right now of being able to, you know, do little weekend spots or whatever nationwide. That, you know, I'm going to start small. I've had opportunities and situations on the table where I could start a store. But it's all in divine timing, too. You know what I'm saying? It's all in, like, right now, North Carolina, Raleigh, yo, that Charlotte, all those places are heavy on, like, my heart right now as a next move, you know what I'm saying, to expand and bring the brand out to. You know why I say that? Because my 5 years of, let's just call it research study of being in, I see that North Carolina has a different level of hospitality when it comes to the message of that brand. Let's just forget the message. Let's just talk about being a young black entrepreneur. It's something about that speaks volumes to your North Carolina resident. Your people coming to Ben Haven Mall from Raleigh and Charlotte and stuff like that. It got to the point, bro, where when people stop and they check it out and I don't have to heckle them as a salesman, it's like, man, you must be from North Carolina, Texas, or somewhere in the West Coast. Because them Texas folk that are out here, they going to stop and have a conversation. And 9 times out of 10, they're going to support. Same thing with North Carolina. They're going to stop and have a conversation. Now, your Virginia folks, a little trip. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it just is what it is. I've been here for 23 years, and I've been in that mall for 5 years. And us Virginia folks, some funny folk when it comes to that, man. You know what I'm saying? And I don't know what it is, but it is what it is. You know what I'm saying? You know, can you relate to what I'm saying without, you know, feeling like I'm shitting on?
No, because I'm born and raised here, and I've seen it all my life.
Okay, cool.
You know, no offense at all. Now, what it is that, and I've kind of always said that, because when you're looking at, it's an extension of what goes on in other places. Whether music or fashion, because like I said, you got places in LA, we talk to people all over, New York, Atlanta, Chicago, whether it's music or fashion, a lot of people have their stuff popping out there where, you know, it's a continued success. Like you see a lot of, like my man G Perico, shout out Broadway, you know, Broadway Gangsta Crib out there, what he has with his, you know, clothing line, you know, with So Way Out, you know, with his company, you know, his This Is a Blue T-shirt that comes in like different colors, you know, the Enterprise. Perico is not only a dope artist, but Perico has been moving with his clothing line for, like, I guess he's been doing this about 6-7 years, you know, and he does well with it, you know. Shout out to my people, you know, out of San Diego, you know, out in Lincoln Park, Mitchie Slick and CJ, the Long Kind, You know, they got their business moving out there. Whether music or fashion, if you're in an area where it's already kind of abundant, everybody kind of gets their name out there, so you kind of have that validation. Virginia, it's a bit tricky because a lot of people have tried to come through with it, and some have done well. You know, shout out to the company Made in Norfolk. You know, they've been doing their thing. You know, of course, back in the day, we had RP, you know, Ron Perry 55, you know, back in the day. But sometimes it's just having to see it on a successful level where people really will support you from your hometown. It's a conundrum because some people will say you got to go out of town to really get the support because the people there are not going to, in your hometown, won't support you because you may move faster than what they did getting out. And conversely speaking, you may have a challenge because you're going somewhere else where people may not know who you are. But then again, if you're going out of town, that bias isn't there. So people are dealing with you from not knowing you, rather people dealing with you from a place where they know you, but it may be a tacit support, but it's not full support. But it's something that no matter where you are, no matter what your hustle is, no matter what your endeavor is, I tell anybody, no matter where you're from, don't let nobody's naysay stop you from finding your way. You got direction, right. You know, you're going to find where you got to get to, no matter what. You know, like you said, in terms of how you know, move the mouthpiece, you know, King and myself, you know, we get to talking to some of our guests before we get them on the show. There was one, you know, and King knows who I'm talking about when I, you know, speak on her. I'm not going to say her name, but we did have her on the show. It took us like a year and a half to get her because we just had, you know, but when I got to talk to her, it only took like 5 minutes for her to say yes. Because we, you know, we actually had the conversation, and in 5 minutes, she was ready to come on, you know. So it just, like you said, it takes timing, but it takes a mouthpiece. It takes about maneuvering. But once everything comes together, you know, like Hannibal said from 18, I love when a plan comes together. Once it comes together, everything is what it is. And this has been so enlightening, so inspirational, so enjoyable. We're about to close shop. It took us a while to get this done, you know, but we had to make, you know, to make the schedules meet and everything. But, you know, I told you a while back we were going to get you on, and we got you, and we're so happy that we did. Shamelessly promote everything that you have for the time that we got. Go ahead. And we were, man, this has been great, man. You know you're welcome back anytime. Tell everybody where to find you online, the mall location, everywhere.
So musically, Hen Music, you know, that's my brand. That's HENMUSIK. HenMusic.com. It's a one-stop shop, you know, to get you to all my social medias. Everything's Hen Music, the Instagram, Facebook, blah blah blah, all that good stuff. But like I said, HenMusic.com would be, you know, the one-stop shop platform to hear music, hear the last project that I put out. Get ready to hear some new music that I'm getting ready to release. And yeah, that's pretty much it on that end. So, you know, I'm also, you know, producing for other artists as well. And
okay.
Yeah, so look out for that. You know, I got some, hold on. The culture. All right. And then, in terms of the clothing, faithclothingbrand.com. You know, www.faithclothingbrand.com. Same thing. You know, you can find everything up there. I'll see you later. Thank you. Hold on. Yeah, I'm transitioning, getting out of a vehicle. But, yeah, you can go to faithclothingbrand.com. I have stuff up there for sale. You know, the basic you know, the main items. But if you're in the Virginia Beach area, you know, you got a popular, very, very popular mall called Lynn Haven Mall. That's where I'm located. It's a kiosk in front of Victoria's Secret and Pink. And, you know, you could pull up on me. I have exclusives that are not available online. So, yeah, and one thing about when you physically pull up on me, too, the prices are cheaper than what it would be online, if, you know. So your typical T-shirt that you get online, you can actually get for, like, $10 cheaper if you're in the mall pulling up on me, if that makes sense. You know, just try to encourage people to physically pull up on me and develop that type of energy, you know what I'm saying? So, yeah, man, Fave Clothing Brand and Music, that's pretty much what governs most of my life. Other than that, man, I hope I'm not leaving anything out. Yeah, I think that's pretty much it, man, you know?
Once again, Hen, you know.
Check out that Seven City Legacy film, too, man.
Okay, definitely, definitely, definitely. Look, from music to media to producing to designing clothes, you're a one-man juggernaut of all things, entrepreneurship and excellence. Hen, thank you so much, so much, so much for being with us. Thank you for the wisdom. You know, thank you for your friendship. And most importantly, thank you for just being a great individual. You know, the world is all the more richer with you in it. Keep your talents forward and your faith prosperous and your success infinite and perpetual. Keep going, man. Keep going.
Appreciate that. Hey, if y'all could do me a favor too, man, and subscribe to my YouTube channel, man, that, you know, that'll definitely help too, man. You know what I mean? I'm definitely up to par with, you know, uploading the content. I got 2.14K subscribers, man. So, yeah, man, if y'all could pin music on YouTube, man, that'd be very appreciated, man. You know, I'll hit that subscribe back as well.
We already did.
What's that? Repeat that. My bad.
What's that? My bad.
Hello, you still here?
Yeah, we already did subscribe.
Oh, okay. Back. Cool. Yeah. You just sounded kind of faded out, but I hear you.
On that note, we're about to be up out of here. We definitely appreciate you joining us tonight, episode 560. We're definitely going to support you and this wave you got going on. And we out.
Yep.
Peace.
Peace.
Yep.